David Kaczynski and Gary Wright first saw each other in federal court. Gary was there as a victim to testify at the sentencing hearing for Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, the man who planted the nail bomb that nearly killed him. Dave was there on the defendant's side of the court with mixed emotions. He loved his older brother, but he also was the man who turned his brother over to the FBI. Starting that day, the victim and the brother of the Unabomber developed an unusual and deep friendship. They talked about it for an article published last month in the Chicago Tribune, and they both join us today. If you've been involved in a violent crime as a victim or as a perpetrator, call and tell us if you've been able to forgive or to apologize. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also share your story on our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. David Kaczynski is currently executive director of New Yorkers Against the Death Penalty, and he joins us today from the studios of member station WAMC in Albany, New York. And welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon, Neil.
And Gary Wright is a technical sales engineer. He's with us today from member station KUER in Salt Lake City in Utah. And thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Neil.
And I wanted to ask you, Gary, to begin. You were there to testify in the sentencing hearing. What did you have to say?
Well, in the sentencing hearing itself, I'd had quite a bit of time to contemplate what I would say, in that for a number of years, that I didn't know exactly who it was who had attacked me. And so during that time, I'd gone through quite a process, had made some choices as to what I would do, whether I would be able to forgive or not. And I don't think that anyone in an event like this really knows how they're going to handle that. But through time, it does heal. And I came to the conclusion that I would basically forgive, in that it was the best thing for me. It would help me go forward with my family to be the best kind of a person that I could be. And at the sentencing hearing, basically, I described the injuries and things like that. But at the same time, I did tell Ted that I forgave him, and that I did it because I didn't know how it would further his cause, and I knew that it would be the right thing for me to do.
And that's, as I understand it, you still feel the effects of that explosion.
There are still some, permanent damage. It's things that the physical part you learn to live with and do differently. There are things that I can't move exactly the same way that I could before. But I always joke around and say I'm the fastest nine-fingered typist you're going to know. So I feel pretty good about it. I don't really have any, ill-bred feelings or anything like that towards the physical piece, but I think the emotional side is what takes people the longest to get through.
And David Kaczynski, tell us a little bit about your emotions that day as you listened to the victims, like Gary Wright, and saw your brother.
Well, sure, it had to be one of the worst days of my life. I heard victims talk about how their lives were impacted by my brother's actions, and it was just harrowing. I mean, widows had lost husbands. Just the amount of human damage and the collateral damage and the pain that people would be living with for years and years to come just was devastating to me. I also was there in the courtroom, kind of looking at my brother at the back of his head, maybe 15 feet away, and I'm also remembering all the times we spent together as brother and then two brothers in the same household. And I'd always admired Ted. I'd always looked up to him, and it just seemed so unreal that it had all come to this. And I had to also confront the possibility that this might be the last time I'd ever see my brother in this lifetime.
And you must also confront the feeling that I'm sure you had, and I don't know whether it's ever been confirmed, but that he felt you betrayed him.
Well, sure. I don't know if Ted truly understands. He does have a mental illness. It's paranoid schizophrenia. At one time, he had actually written me a letter. This was several years before I began to suspect that he was the Unabomber, but he said I was the only person he'd ever loved, and if anything should ever happen to him, I should always remember that. And here, 5 years later, after my wife urges me to read the manifesto, Linda actually suspects before I do, and eventually I'm confronting the possibility that this man who's killed three people over a period of years and injured a dozen others is, in fact, my older brother Ted, my only sibling. So there's a lot that converges on this moment, and I'd also gotten to know Gary through some conversations on the phone, and he stood there with such dignity and confronted my brother. In no way did he, in forgiving my brother, did he accept or condone what my brother had done. But he basically had the message, I have to go on and live with this. This is, Ted, you have to live with what you've done. I choose to live without hatred. And for me, it was just an astonishing testament to resilience and a positive way of moving forward from a devastating event that had changed Gary's life completely.
And later that day, you called him.
Yeah, actually, you know, it was kind of funny in the courtroom. It's kind of divided between two sides, and there were many victims in the courtroom that day, all on one side of the courtroom, and I was there with our family lawyer and a bunch of media on the right side. I felt about as lonely as you could feel. Of course, the media were there, and there was the obligatory press conference and so forth, and went back to my hotel room, sort of, I guess, relieved it was, in some sense, finally over. And then I thought, you know, who do I want to talk to at this moment? And I thought I wanted to talk to Gary. I wanted to thank him for what he'd said. I wanted to thank him for his friendship. And Gary said, Dave, where are you? And I said, well, I'm in the Holiday Inn. And Gary said, well, isn't that a coincidence? I'm right across the street from there. Let's get together and talk. And we spent the next couple of hours just, you know, sort of processing together what that day had meant for both of us.
And Gary Wright, I know that it's gone on from there. You have gone canoeing together. You visited with each other. You now call each other brothers.
Yeah, it's. I don't think it's a term we use lightly. I mean, when you define what happens in a family or someone who's extremely close to you, you share the most intimate moments of your life. And I would say that David and I have done that. We spent literally thousands of miles behind a windshield traveling across the country. We will speak together at times. And, you know, I think we give each other advice. I think that we really respect the other's opinion. And sometimes, I guess, at the lowest points of life, we have called each other. I know that when David first called, it was extremely low time for him the first time we spoke on the phone. And I can remember telling him, look, Dave, I've had a long time to deal with this and process it, and I promise you it will get better. And if you need to call me at any time, just feel free, day or night. And I think that we've both lived up to that end of it, in that we know we could pick up the phone at any time. I mean, both, I have a father that isn't doing well, and he his mother has had illnesses through age and things like that as well. And we call each other on those times when we need to talk. So, yeah, I'd say that we have bridged a gap that I don't know is possible for everyone to do, because I think it takes a unique situation, a unique couple of individuals to do that. But I guess we view it as a possibility of a change for the future, a possibility of change in the criminal justice system, that maybe some more of this could be facilitated. And there's a huge amount of healing, I believe, that goes on with this. Because through the standard system, through the criminal justice system, I don't believe it's about healing for, let's say, a survivor and a perpetrator's family. There is a system that is processed, but I don't think it does help the folks heal. And this has helped in many ways. I know a lot of things about the family that no one does. I mean, I've just spent the time to get to know them, and you realize that one person doesn't define a family. There is a great amount of history there. When you can look back to the time when Ted was a young boy, he didn't have paranoid schizophrenia or a chemical imbalance or whatever is associated with it genetically. There's probably a dozen things that you could attribute to it. But when you realize that and you can put a human face on the family members that surrounding that person and realize that they too have suffered a great deal, sometimes I think more so than the physical pain that I went through. I mean, the physical and emotional,
sure.
Because at some point it goes away for me. And so, yeah, I think that we have shared probably as deep as most folks ever get the opportunity to share with each other.
We're talking with Gary Wright, one of the victims of the Unabomber, and with his brother, David Kaczynski. And let's see if we get a caller on the line. And this is Doug, and Doug's calling us from California.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I had a question for David. I'm not sure the facts around this, but I was told that he got a large reward, and my cousin Gilbert Murray was the last victim of the Unabomber, and he was killed. And I was wondering if that any of that reward ended up back in the hands of some of the victims of Ted.
Was there a reward, David?
Well, I just want to acknowledge the caller and thank you so much. And the Murray family has been very, made a deep impression on me with their decency and kindness. There was a reward. I've faced some tough decisions in my life. My wife and I both did. This was not a tough decision, what we would do with the $1 million that the government gave us in return for turning Ted in. And believe me, we didn't want to keep a penny of it. I wouldn't want anyone to think that I would turn in my brother for money. But I thought if there was some way we could show, in some tangible way that we were very, very deeply sorry, this would be a way to do it. So the beneficiaries have all been promised confidentiality, so I never talk about that, but a substantial part of that reward went to victims and their family members.
Okay, that's good to hear.
Thanks for the call, Doug.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get Tina on the line. Tina's calling us also from California.
Yeah, I was the victim of a pretty horrific date rape when I was in college in the 70s. At that point in time, we didn't have the word for it that we have today. And I think one of the hardest things to do in the process of letting go is to forgive the actor but still hold the actor responsible and accountable for his actions.
And,
it's a really tough thing to forgive and still hold somebody accountable, but I think the forgiveness piece is really important in the healing process.
And was the perpetrator in your case, was he apprehended, caught?
No, it was a classic case of blaming oneself for what wasn't mine. And I didn't talk about it for probably 10 years afterwards, until the first time I read the words date rape and suddenly went, oh, that's what happened.
Uh-huh.
So, I was too scared and too young to go and tell somebody what had happened because I figured they'd blame me for having been available sexually to guys in the first place. And so, I've never approached him. I've played with the idea for years of writing a letter. I know who the person is. I know where he is. And in the end, decided that I just needed to move on and let go, but I could still hold him accountable for his actions, but forgive the act.
Gary Wright, could you tell us about your process a little bit? And did the fact that I know you worked with the FBI to help catch the person who did this, but did the fact that he was eventually caught make it easier to accept and forgive?
Well, I had actually made the decision to forgive him about 3 years prior to his capture because I'd been dealing with this ghost figure, if you will, not knowing who it was, wondering if it was in business or a person that I might have met along the way of life. And basically what I did is I had to redefine what forgiveness means. And I think that people who go through something traumatic, you come to a choice where you have to do that because if you take the standard definition out of Webster's or any other thing you hear people talk about as far as forgiveness, it's not going to match up with what you need to do. And basically the way that I came to grips with this is I said, look, I love myself enough that I'm not going to let people around me see me as less than what I could be or not realize my potential and see me as a half person, if you will. And when I put that definition to it, it kind of gave me traction to be able to say I'm going to move forward. And when I say forgive, as David had mentioned earlier, I don't accept anything that happened to me. I mean, I wouldn't wish any of it on my worst enemy. But I do think the redefinition and the redefining of what forgiveness really means does facilitate the ability to do it because people on the outside will say, well, you accepted this, that's wrong, or there's a right or a wrong. There's not a right or a wrong in this. The only thing that can come out of it is that you want people to be whole again, and that means you don't want to keep moving forward the effects of violence into, say, my children or my friends or relatives. And with that definition, I could stop that.
Yeah, I think that part of what's really important is the recognition that even though horrible things happen to us, those horrible things do shape who we are. And when I'm able to say that who I am is a full and whole and complete human being, and I actually like that person and love that person, that all of the events in my life fit into some pattern that makes sense, and that's one of the great challenges. But it is a redefinition of what forgiveness means. I totally agree with that and appreciate your comments.
And Tina, let me just say,
I do.
And Tina, let me say how sorry I am for what happened to you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, Tina. We just have a little time left, David Kaczynski, I wanted to ask you, your brother's cabin is here at the museum. It's downstairs on the basement floor. I know you visited him in it. It's empty now. Will you come and see it?
Probably not. You know, the cabin that really holds the intimate memories for me is the one I remember, where I spent hours with Ted before he became the Unabomber. And, of course, that's the brother I prefer to remember as well. I think, you know, the display, and I haven't seen it, and I wouldn't judge it without seeing it, does tend to play to a popular fascination with crime and violence. And I think all the focus, unfortunately, is on the person who committed the violence, and not so much on lessons that could be learned from it. In my brother's case, there was a serious mental illness, and I think we need to deal proactively. Hopefully, you know, crimes, like my brother's, lives could have been saved if there had been an intervention and treatment early on.
And I'm afraid we're just going to have to...
I also think there is not enough...
David, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're just out of time. This is NPR News.